Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio.
Footy's on the radio.
And your front row. Welcome to the Sunday Rub.
For McDonald's Family McValue Box.
Triple M rocks footy.
Roof closed at Etihad Stadium later on today. St Kilda take on the Geelong Football Club. The Saints are always very good at Etihad. Should be an absolutely wonderful game of football. A lot of guests coming your way today on the Sunday Rub. Clay Smith, all about Bob Day from yesterday, where the Bulldogs pulled one out of the hat for the Robert Murphy against the Brisbane Lions. Leon Cameron will join us and respond to the comments made by Heath Shaw yesterday. Sam Menengola from the Geelong Football Club will join us. We've also got the quiz and Roosie story. Locked and loaded, big show. Jay-Z is in the house. Hello, great man.
Hello, Howie. I wonder whether Collingwood's got to make a late change on Tuesday. Absolute huge game versus Essendon. They've picked Mason Cox. I want to ask Roosie later if it's going to be a torrential downpour on Tuesday as expected, whether the big man might line up in the goal square or might be going back to just Darcy Moore.
Jay-Z, a lot to get through with you. Schwatter is in the house. How far are we going on the bike this morning, Schwat?
No, not today, mate. I had to study up for the quiz because currently leading that little competition, rating juggernaut.
Yes, and Jay-Z's yet to get off on the mark in this one. And the great man Wayne Carey picked me up today, and it makes me smile because in the back of the beautiful Mercedes that he drives, there's little baby seats, there's baby wipes, there's all sorts of paraphernalia involved with young children. It makes me smile, Ducky.
Does it? How are you, Howie? How, gentlemen and listeners, good to be here. Going to be a ripping game today. Really looking forward to this one. And then obviously a big day tomorrow night.
Yes.
And obviously Anzac Day on Tuesday. So a big weekend of footy.
And Roosie, just off the plane back from Sydney last night, you saw the Premiership favourites or not in action?
I think Adelaide are going pretty well. But yeah, look, the Giants, I think what you noticed, it's stating the obvious, but their talent level is just excessive. I mean, some of their kicks inside 50 last night to their talls, Duck would have kicked 12, I reckon, which is unusual now to see that this extreme elite kicking, because I think that's one of the areas of the game that hasn't improved a lot over the last sort of 20 years. But some of the kicks inside 50 by some of these Giants players, and to be perfectly frank, they actually didn't play that well, and they still won by, you know, 40-something points.
I think that's the difference between, and I know we've got a big preview and we'll probably get around to it, but the big difference between GWS and Adelaide at the moment is Adelaide, I reckon, are playing just unbelievable footy. The best footy they've played probably for, you know, at least a few years or whatever it is. I know they had good patches last year, but GWS, you just feel, okay, they're winning, but you just feel they've still got another gear to go.
Yeah, definitely.
The big story, obviously, out of yesterday's football, rightly or wrongly, Jay-Z, inappropriate comments towards Papley from the Sydney Swans from Heath Shaw, pretty much revolving around members or special needs members of the community would be the best way to say it. We've chosen not to play those comments. You can read them in the newspaper today, but there's been a development around that story this morning.
Yeah, Heath Shaw is in hot water and quite rightly has apologised this morning. So the mics picked up something that he said, as you said, was very offensive. Disgusting. I think football's moved on a long way to tolerate this sort of language. But he has apologised for the insensitive comment I made to Tom Papley during last night's game. Yes, I'm a fiery person who plays with a lot of passion and emotion, but that is no excuse for my actions last night, Heath Shaw said. I apologise to Tom and anyone else who took offence to my comments. I deeply regret them. There is no place for comments of that nature on or off the football ground. It's an offensive remark that I should never have made, and for that I apologise. And I think it can't stop with that too, Howie. I mean, I'm quite strong on this. I think he needs to engage with a charitable organisation or a community program that actually helps out people with special needs or a disability. He has to be quite proactive about this. Really, we just can't accept it. Good on Heath Shaw for apologising, but I think we all agree that I think he's got to put up his hand and maybe do a little bit more on this one.
And before we get into that debate, Leon Cameron will be joining us later on the show in the Sunday Rub, but he spoke about this incident last night in his press conference.
Yeah, we just had a brief discussion about it. I don't know the level of detail, so we'll use the next 24 hours to have a really good discussion about actually what happened. So it's hard for me to comment any further until I actually hear exactly what happened, and we'll have a discussion with the people involved and see where that leads to.
So there's a couple of issues at play here. Firstly, we'll discuss what was said on the footy field. Whether it deserves to stay on the footy field is a whole other discussion, which we'll get to. But when you gentlemen heard these comments, whether you heard it live in the game, whether you saw it written today, Schwatter?
I think Look, I can understand Heath. I think he's a fiery character that likes to play on the line. But I think part of being a modern-day AFL footballer is that you've got to have a filter and you need to know what's acceptable and what's not. And if there's any doubt, and I mean any doubt, I mean, generally when you're trying to engage in things, you'll think about what you might say. If you're at least any doubtful or got some doubt about what you're about to say, then don't say it. It's that simple.
Through a mistake, and he's clearly apologised, realised he's made a mistake straight away. And through a mistake, I think it brings it to the fore. So there's so much positive now that'll come from a mistake, Jay-Z. So, you know, I look at that now and you can clearly hear through his apology that, you know, he knows he's made a mistake. And I think you're right. I think now he'll do something about it. It brings it to the attention of everyone else. And, you know, we can all be more proactive in a lot of things.
Yeah, I think there's two things to it. I was actually on doing the TV when it happened, and Jason Dunstall immediately apologised. So I think that's the level, Swatter, now that people find that unacceptable, which is as they should. And I think the second is what you said, Duck. These things now become learning things, and I think that's a really good thing for us as a community. So clearly Jason and myself, and he got it out quicker, and it was quite audible on the telly. Mm. Bang, unacceptable straight away from a commentator, and player comes out straight away, and we can educate and keep educating.
So through a mistake of an AFL footballer, comes out and apologises straight away. Think of all the kids, and you know, you go to school and the bullying and all of that, and what goes on in the schoolyard. And kids are kids, and they're growing up, and they clearly make mistakes like that. They see this now as an example, and then they see Jason, and they see that we're discussing it, and they hear that we're discussing it. It's on every footy show, and they go, you know what? I'm in the school. It's unacceptable for me to do that, and it makes them think. So through a mistake, so many positives can come from it.
I like, to pick up on what Duck and Roosie have said, I like what the game does now. 2 weeks ago, we had a situation with Eddie Betts, and the respective supporter base got involved. The playing group from both Port and Adelaide got involved and got behind the issue. We're now moderating ourselves, and I think that shows you how far we've come as a game. That for, you know, 3-5 years ago, Chief or any one of us, if we had heard something like that, we would have stayed silent on it, because we just weren't sort of educated with regards to how to deal with it, what's the time to deal with it, and when is the right time to deal with it. But that happened. Chief immediately, I didn't hear it, Bruzy, but it's pleasing to hear that, you know, Jason Dunstall, regarded as one of the greats, immediately gets on the front foot. So we try to nip it in the bud as much as possible. It limits the damage, not excluding the fact that people may be really upset about these type of comments. But I just think that's a level of maturity our game now has, that people within the industry are not afraid to actually start to say and have a conversation around it.
Couldn't agree with more of the comments you guys have made. I guess the follow-on from that is modern sport now, and we've had problems in the Big Bash cricket where we mic up players, and I've got myself into trouble there asking players direct questions on the ground, and it opens up a whole new can of worms. Should the players out on the ground need to worry about thinking what they say? Now, obviously, this is not the right thing to say, so don't get the issues confused, but should the players be subject to this type of scrutiny at their workplace, which is basically where it is?
The answer is no. And again, let's separate the two. We're not now talking about what Heath Shaw said. So let's
absolutely
be really,
not.
Really clear on that. Would you mic someone at BHP in their board meeting when they're discussing something as critical as buying a new mine or something like that? It is completely ridiculous that we are exposing players to these situations. This is a minor thing compared to players on the field. I remember one of the first things I did as the Swans coach when I took over is ban everyone from coming in the rooms before the game. That is their workplace. That is where and look, to be fair to Richard Collis, it was simple. He said, "Roosie, whatever you want, that's fine." We had board members, we had supporters, we had parents, you know, wandering through their workplace. I don't think we respect the player's workplace anywhere near as enough as what we should. And I think it's an issue that the PA should take up, you know, in terms of what is their workplace. I don't think we even define it. There's cameras in the rooms all the time. You know, a player goes off, gets injured at halftime, there's cameras what other workplace do you go to? Now, people out there will say, and I won't disagree with it, that they're getting paid a lot of money. But I think we still need to work out where that line gets crossed, where they should be able to perform their duty without any, you know, outside interference, for want of a better term.
Roosie, you're at the game last night. I didn't see it. I only heard it this morning when it was played back. Do you know what type of microphone was picked up on? There was some discussion it could have been through an umpire.
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but that's what I'd heard today. Now, that, I mean, and the umpires would say it's a almost collateral damage, because they say that educating the umpires is really important to have the microphone. So I don't know. I'm not giving a solution. All I'm saying is, I think at times we don't respect the player's workplace. When we wouldn't do it in any other industry at all.
It's a really fine line, because also we can't wind it back to 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago where you don't get the access. There's an enormous amount paid from broadcast rights.
Well, we
people
get it,
want
Howie.
To see, and people hear, and we do. We
Triple
get it.
Triple M coverage. You know, we love listening.
We
to
do on the radio, on the umpire. Maybe we are getting to the point, and I posed the question to you at the start, maybe because we are an entertainment business, which is what we are, Roosie, maybe it is getting to the point where the players have to think that everything they do or say on the footy field will be broadcast in some way, shape or form.
Well, I think that's what it's saying. I mean, I think there's no doubt that the players have to be aware of it, and I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing for listeners or media people or whatever.
But all you'd scrap them. You'd scrap all the mics if it was up to you tomorrow.
I don't know what Duck and Swatter think, but I don't find it that interesting. But I've been involved in football.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the most boring thing when I
but no, that's
when I
turn because, on. That's because it's your workplace.
No, that's what I'm saying. So I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because if I hear a player mic'd up and he's running out on the ground before the game, going, "Well done, mate. Yeah, good work, mate." I find that completely boring, you know. But I'm the wrong person to ask in terms of the entertainment value.
It's the umpires that are mic'd up. The sounds of the game. That's what I guess we want to hear, the umpire and why they made a decision and all that sort of stuff. Now those mics, unfortunately, are going to pick up players around them. That's what the players have to be aware of. I agree with everything Roosie said. It's spot on. But
so you'd scrap the mics as well.
No, because I think most supporters, and me as a person that sits up and talks about the game, I think listening to the umpire and hearing what the decision they've made and all the sounds of the game in and around is interesting.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to put the genie back in the bottle. So, as I said 2 minutes ago, Schwatter, I think the players, you might even feel it's the wrong thing, but they're going to have to watch every single thing say. You've almost got to imagine everything I say on this footy field could be broadcast to a national audience.
Well that's the nature of the business, because this is an entertainment business, and part of playing football is the fact that there is the potential for these situations to happen. Look, I actually like hearing. I wish that, I don't think we'll ever get this, but I love hearing players talk as a former player, but also just as a punter who goes and sees a lot of footy. I just wish that we could see the real stuff that they talk about, because with what Roosie said, well done, mate, good effort, mate, you know, that's all rah, rah, rah. But some of the informative conversations that players have as a former player would be fantastic, because I think that would take the game to a new level. But I respect the fact that you're not going to allow that as a coach, because that's sensitive information.
I actually agree with Roosie in part with the as I guess probably as a former player, when we mic players up for Channel 7, and you know it might be the captain or whatever, I find most of that, and they know they're mic'd up, I just find most of that boring. I'm like you, it's just rah rah rah.
It's because you've been there and
That's what I'm saying. That's how I view it.
The other issue bubbling away from a medical standing. Angus Brayshaw, a wonderful player for the Melbourne Footy Club, playing in the VFL yesterday, copped a significant knock. Bring us up to date with what's happening there, Jay-Z. And I know you're trying to get a spokesman on from Melbourne just to fill us in at some stage about where he's at.
Well, he's been concussed again, Howie. And we know what a sensitive issue concussion is at the moment. It's being treated so seriously. We've seen Sean Dempster retire, Justin Clark from Brisbane, and recently Heredia at Lumumba. So players are much more aware of the genuine risks of concussion and repeat concussions. Now, Angus Brayshaw was concussed twice. Twice last year. One in particular was quite heavy and he missed a month of football. So there's a big sort of watch on Angus Brayshaw, and he's getting great care and treatment at Melbourne. But he was concussed again last night. And as you said, we're going to try and get Josh Marnie on to talk about this. And as I understand, it was a really heavy hit. Mm. Now, in a way, that's encouraging news, Howie, because if it was a light blow, and he got concussed from something quite small, then that would be a significant worry. But because it was a heavy hit that probably would have concussed most players, then that almost is relieving. And the good news is that we understand that Angus Brochure is feeling quite well this morning, and Melbourne expects him to play next weekend. But when players have repeat concussion swatter, I think it makes everyone very nervous, because we're unsure really about the cumulative effect of all these
head
blows.
As soon as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about Justin Clark, 22 years old, he was on a program on the ABC recently with Insights, and you know, some guys are just unlucky, are they, that they seem to get these knocks, whereas you can see other guys go through their entire career and never really suffer a significant head blow.
We look at Luke Hodge last week, who got hit twice in the head. He bounces up, doesn't have any ill effects from that whatsoever, no concussion. And then you get a guy, it's all about your makeup.
Do you fear for Angus? Different. This is a bloke that came to the footy club when you were there and you coached him, and you were in a situation where he spent a lot of time in a dark room, I think, after one of these incidents, Roosie.
Yeah, I've known Angus since my son played footy with him at the Dragons. So he's a really good kid, and I have a very close relationship with him. Look, it's such a difficult one for any of us to discuss, because it's such a not a new issue, but it's such a medical issue that it's not black and white. I mean, you do an ACL and, you know, you might be out for 12 months, but you know what the rehab process is. I think, Jay-Z, you're right. It's a big hit, which we think is probably better, but he's woken up pretty well. Equally, I want to make it clear, I've seen players, particularly at Melbourne, Nev Jetter had a few concussions, Rowan Bale had a few concussions, and they both, Nev Jetter's still playing, very, very good football. So I think we're being cautious because of the uncertainty around it, and I guess in a sense the newness of Clark, Lumumba, I think Teddy Richards was another one, Shaunie Dempster. We just haven't seen this in football before, where guys have retired effectively. But I think there is a difference between a 29, 30, 31-year-old than a 20-year-old. You know, so those guys are clearly thinking about life after football. Angus Brayshaw is still thinking about playing for 10 or 12 years.
But should he be thinking about life after football? I know you say there's a difference between the 29 and the 30-year-old who's a little bit more mature and realises they're more to life. Do you worry about the 20-year-old that just wants to get out there and play for
it? Well, no, because the medical staff are excellent. You know, the care that they've got, they'll go and see experts, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a difference, though, that if Shaunie Dempster, I'm speculating, I'm not saying he has, but if Shaunie Dempster says, someone says, look, Shaunie, have 8 weeks off, and you're 30 years of old, 31 years of age, you're going, well, hang on. If it's Angus Brayshaw, well, you're 20, 21 years of age. It's a completely different conversation, that you're going to have with, or you're going to, in your own mind, you're going to have with yourself, to be perfectly frank.
We are stoked, it must be said, on the Sunday Rub to welcome to the show from the Western Bulldogs, Clay Smith. Hello, Clay.
Hey, boys, how we go?
Oh, great to speak to you. First half, how did you see it? A lot of people in the football world were surprised. They were amazingly efficient up forward, Clay.
Yeah, I was pretty nervous at half time, actually. We played some pretty good footy in the first quarter and had, a double there inside 50s and scoring shots, but obviously couldn't kick the ball real straight, and I think they kicked 8 straight goals without missing right up to halfway through the second quarter. So they were obviously very efficient going inside 50, and probably hurt us a fair bit from lack of pressure and ease of goals that they got.
Yeah, I thought it was a great example, Clay, of the modern game yesterday. And I was watching it sort of on the television. But if you don't get your pressure, and you just touched on it then, I thought what it showed, if you don't get your pressure right on the ball, around the ball, with team defences now and defences taking best position and front spot, it was incredible the number of easy goals Brisbane were allowed to get. That must have been a real focus of Luke's at quarter time and half time, because it was the modern game. Get your pressure right, get your re-entries, then you're fine. If you don't, then the ball whisks down the middle of the ground, you get easy goals kicked against you.
Yeah, that's for sure. That was one of the big points. But yeah, as a midfield group and forward, that's what we pride ourselves on, and putting the pressure on so that we can allow our backs to play the way that they do and play so aggressively so that we can score off the back. But we were just a bit off, and they got the ball out the back a little bit too easy at times, and they just scored too many goals pretty much from inside the goal square, which is too hard to stop.
Yeah, I just want to ask you about your confidence levels, because you're playing super well, but you are playing like a premiership team. Now, that might sound a bit contradictory, but I just think your ability to come from behind, your ability to sustain and just trust each other, not panic. I think you were 36 or 38 points behind. And I reckon that's been the trademark. I still think you're not playing as well as last year, but I love the way the confidence level of the group and the way you stick together and you're 4-1, which is a good start to the season.
It's definitely something we've probably worked on, but it's not something that we would want to do every week. We'd rather be sitting with a nice buffer at half time, but obviously we had a fair few close games last year, and we've had a few this year already, and just a belief and confidence in the boys to know that we can turn a six goal differential around, and we've just got to play the way that we want to play, and we know that can happen. So it's about just backing ourselves in more and worrying about how we go about it more than what the opposition is doing, and just trusting that what we do works.
Clay, we saw you guys were the number one stoppage team last year, but you haven't had anywhere near the success around the contested ball this year. And Luke Beveridge just sort of highlighted the impact of the third man up rule has really had on you guys. Have you really had to change the way you operate in there because you aren't having sort of Marcus Bontempelli coming over the top and hitting it into space? How much has that third man up rule sort of impacted the way you guys do things in the engine room?
Yeah, it's obviously impacted us one of the most out of the sides, but it's just one of the new rules that they've brought in, and they have a few different ones each year, and it's just something that as players that you have to adapt to, and every other club has to as well. And we're trying to work out what works best for us at the moment around there, and we feel like we're getting better each week, but yeah, it's an area where we need to get on top of again.
And I think in round one, mate, just from your own personal perspective, you didn't make the round one team, is that right?
No, I didn't play the first three rounds.
So how did you take that, mate? Because I probably was one that I had you sort of penciled in the Dogs' best 22 in round one. How did you take that personally?
Yeah, that was tough. I didn't find out until a couple of days before. To come up and sort of gave me a tap on the shoulder and had a word to me, and we just had a lot of players back and fit, and Murph was back, Suckers was fit, and all their halfbacks were up and running. And then we had obviously Cloakie and Stewie Cranberry come back, and they wanted to go with some height and see what was how that was going to work out with the boys. So he sort of just come up and was unfortunate, and he said he didn't want to, but that's the way it goes. And I guess when you've got a good side, and obviously coming off the back of a premiership, it's a healthy thing for the club, but you never want to be on the receiving end of them drop, that's for sure.
Hey, Clay, I just want to go back to your second answer to Roosie's second question. You talked about the group having confidence that you could still turn a 36-point, six-goal differential around. At what stage, what's the cutoff or the threshold? Where does it start to get a real concern? Six goals in the modern day, you've just sort of validated that. You're still confident you can turn that around. Is it an eight-goal margin that you get really concerned that it's got away from you?
I don't know the exact margin. Six goals, you're starting to think that they can't get too many more because it could get out of hand. But that's the thing that we've looked at this year, is just we've had a lot of big point swings during matches. So there's been a lot of goals scored for the one side in patches, so it's just something that we're trying to work on in limiting the influence they have for that period of time where they do have momentum, and just limiting the amount of goals they do have, so we're not chasing so much back. But I don't think we really want to be trying to find out how far we can come back from.
Hey Clay, obviously yesterday Bob Murphy's 300th game. I noticed after half time, Easton Wood was the player that addressed everyone, was quite vocal when he spoke to the players. Do you remember what he was trying to put across? He seemed quite animated.
Yeah, Woody, he obviously did such a good job last year filling in for Murph, and has always been a great leader, and just playing for the jumper and playing for the side and playing for the love of the club that we do each week, and that it wasn't probably our best in the second quarter. It just wasn't good enough at all for them to do what they did, and how we played, and it just really hurt us, and just being such a milestone game for someone that's been such a long-serving and unreal player for the club over such a long period of time. It's not how we wanted to finish the night off. So it was about going back and playing for the club, playing for the jumper.
Just before we let you go, where do we find you this morning, Smitty? You sound very low key on the whole scenario. What are you up to?
I'm back on the couch this morning. I had breakfast with my fiance this morning and laying back watching movies at the moment.
Is that you can confirm you have been off the couch?
I've been off the couch, been for a walk, taking the dogs for a walk. But it's a pretty cruisy Sunday for me after a game.
And what movie are we sliding into today now? My duck likes his movies. What are you watching in Duckle Tea if it's
we've
any
got,
good?
We bought a zoo.
Oh, we bought a zoo. Matt Damon, not a bad film, Duck.
Yes,
you would have seen this.
I have seen it.
How
I
many quacks would it get? Oh,
three quacks.
Enjoy the movie, Clay. We appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks, boys.
Clay Smith from the Western Bulldogs.
Just explain for those who don't
know. Well, we used to do a show called Dead Set Legends, Duck, before we got the chop. But anyway, that's a whole other story. And used to give out of five quacks how many, how many quacks you thought a movie was.
Well, it was movies, and then I became a food critic.
Yes.
And,
well, that was a whole other situation, Duck, that you need to explain to Roosie.
I'd go to restaurants, Roosie, and sort of give a, you know, for value and service.
And then
quality
free,
of
and
food.
And free meals.
Yes.
And then sort of started to get a couple of...
Now, I tell you, complete aside, if you want a movie, I flew home on Friday after the Friday night game. Why him?
Why him?
Why him?
Yeah,
good.
Boys. My boys have highly recommended that one. Yeah.
Loose, not for the kiddies, but a very nice film. Giants, after they had another big win yesterday, their coach Leon Cameron, after beating Sydney by 42 points, is on the line now in the Sunday Rub. G'day, Leon.
Mark, how are you?
Oh, Mark, now you put me offside straight away.
You've won the game, Leaping Leon. You've won the game, son.
Now, that's only my mum's territory. I feel you put me offside straight away there, Mr. Cameron.
Sorry, buddy. You mean I'll call you Howie, do you?
Well, now I feel much more relaxed. Thank you, Leon.
Leon, it's Jay Clark here from the Herald Sun. Let's address the Heath Shaw situation straight away and get out of the way. Have you spoken to Heath and have you canvassed your disappointment in the unacceptable comments he made in the game last night?
Yeah, look, it was disappointing, Jay. As we know, we had a statement this morning. He's, you know, genuinely remorseful about obviously what happened. We understand that these things do happen in the game. We've all played the game and know that emotions can tip over the edge at times. And he's such a competitor. So he is really flat about it. What you've seen in the statement is exactly what Heath wanted in that statement as well. So, we're disappointed as a footy club. You don't want that to be a headline act after a pretty solid performance on the field as well.
We understand he is a competitor and he gets as fired up as anyone. Do you think, is there something else the footy club wants, you know, potentially a fine? Would you like to see him get down to a charitable organisation? Do you think he could be proactive now? There's an opportunity for him to really back up this apology with his actions?
Oh, yeah, I think Heath will. And I think people know that Heath plays on the edge, which is what we like about him. And you know, his last 3 or 4 years at the Giants have been absolutely fantastic in terms of what he's done on the footy field for us and also off the field. And I don't want him to be judged on, you know, one or two incidences. And, you know, obviously yesterday wasn't ideal. And I'm sure Heath will be on the front foot in terms of where this leads to in terms of follow-up. But he's a genuine person and, you know, we all make mistakes. And what I do like about what he does and goes about it is he gets on the front foot and, if he has made a mistake, he owns up to it.
Mate, give us a little bit of an insight into the box at 18 disposals to zero and four goals to nothing. So in all seriousness, what are the sort of discussions that may have been taking place at that time?
Yeah, you're right, Roosie. I mean, it was quite unique. And we knew they'd come out on their home deck playing with some sort of fire, but we were actually pretty wound up ourselves. You know, that's what the derbies are about. And but when you couldn't touch it for 18, you know, first 5 minutes and 18 disposals to zero, we're thinking, you know, what do we do? Look, you have a decision. You go, well, do we put an extra around the footy? Do we put one behind the footy? We happened to put a player behind the footy for the next probably 7 or 8 minutes just to stem the flow a little bit. That helped us a little bit just to get their hands on the footy. And then from there, you sort of make a decision, well, how do you then score? We then started to score a few, although they weren't majors, they were a lot of points. So we sort of got it on our terms again, probably after that 6 or 7 minute mark. And then you sort of got to follow up again and say, well, is the man behind the ball going to allow you to score 2 or 3 goals to get back on even keel? So we sort of go back to then even numbers ahead of the footy after that.
Hey, Bakes, we did the game against Adelaide in round one and soundly beaten. What did you address? Because the last 4 weeks have been pretty solid. What was the main focus coming off the back of that opening loss to the Adelaide Crows?
Yes, well, we were really, I mean, credit where credit's due. I mean, they're sitting on top for a reason. They're playing some great footy, Adelaide, and they absolutely pantsed us for most of the day. And we were really poor in some areas. So, and probably the main one was defensively. I mean, they kicked 150 points against us. And I know, look, I understand that they're, you know, an outstanding scoring team and they are hurting everyone on the scoreboard. But we've sort of preached over the last 2.5 years, if we're going to make it in this competition as a footy club, we need to play better defence. And last night was a clear example of that. And other than the first 5 minutes, the opposition kicked 5 goals against us for probably the remaining 115. And so it's a work in progress. We fluctuate with it. Against Adelaide, we were really bad. In the last 3 weeks, there's no doubt we've got a lot better. But if we are to remain a top four side or a side that's going to regularly compete in the finals, then your defence has to come to the fore every week. And it can't sort of be on and off from week to week.
Bakes, looking forward now, I reckon you would have had this round coming up penciled in before the start of the year, the preliminary final against the Bulldogs in Canberra, Friday night footy. Do you bring up at all last year, or do players just automatically know that, you know, this is a side that beat us? Does it have to be brought up?
No, Duck, we won't bring it up. Look, we had a really good review. I think that's the challenge. You say, do you review it? Do you not? Sometimes you can take the easy way out and not review it. But we reviewed it back on December 5, and then it was done and dusted. We were poor in a number of areas. You know, the game was obviously a very, very good game in terms of spectacle, but in terms from a Giants point of view, they probably should have won by 5 or 6 goals. So we were lucky to probably be in that position right at the end with a minute or two to go to nearly snatch the game. But no, we won't bring it up. Look, we've had some good games against them now, and we know that there's the little rivalry being built there because of, you know, players swapping clubs and you know, a few things that have gone on in the past. But it's not going to be brought up. They've got some different personnel in their team. We've got a couple of new kids in our team, and I expect it just to be a cracking game on Friday night.
We're speaking to the GWS coach, Leon Cameron, on the Sunday Rub.
Just as long as Basil Zempel doesn't ask you a question after the Bulldogs kick a goal.
Zempel.
What did you think of that, Bakes, when that happened?
Well, I was actually proud of my response. I think I was pretty quick in saying, listen, Basil, wrong team or something. Quite unique.
Yes.
I thought a couple of things really stood out for me last night, Leon, was... I mean, you feel kicking inside your forward 50 just really seemed to get you back in the game. And that was sort of coupled with, I mean, they were a little bit undersized defensively, but there's the other thing is for you to exploit it. So I thought you were able to do that really well, taking their young defenders back and maybe moving Grundy out, trying to get him up the ground. And the kicking inside forward 50, some of the kicks I saw last night were just absolutely elite.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when we sort of said, when I said we sort of got the game back on our terms after that initial onslaught, you then got to hit the scoreboard to sort of, you know, get the confidence in the players to know that you're actually heading in the right direction. So you're right. I think there was probably about 4 or 5 really good options going forward in that sort of back end of the first quarter that allowed us to have better shots and also disturb their defence. We understand they're missing Rampy, who's an All-Australian defender. You know, and they obviously brought in a first gamer, but I thought he was actually really good, actually, Melican. But I thought we showed some good composure with the ball when we had to. We moved it quick when we had to, and then we were really poised when we had to. And that's the great challenge. I mean, if you can get that balance right, then it can disturb any backline.
Yeah. Well, other than... sorry, Paul. Yeah. Keep going.
I was just going to ask you, Jeremy Cameron, I've loved the way he's played this year. There's been a real... seems to have been a real difference in him coming at the football. I think one criticism of Jeremy was the fact that he'd go over the back a lot. He'd sort of sneak up and go over the back. I've loved his balance this year. I find him coming more at the ball. Is that something you've worked really hard on with him?
Yeah, you're right. Look, he's... it was a probably victim of his own circumstances to bounce under the AFL scene in sort of year two and kick 70-odd goals in a team that only won one game. you know, the expectation was just enormous the next few years. He's an old-fashioned footballer. He's really hard at it. We know that. We love that. But he hasn't had that 10,000 hours of footy like a lot of us have. He only started playing competitive footy around 15. So it's taken a little bit of time to understand the ins and outs of when to come at the footy, when to get out the back, you know, when to go up and find the ball when, your backman might be having the better of you. So I think he's really working that out. And the pleasing thing is he's averaging around that sort of 15 to 18 possessions as a centre-half forward regularly. It's not just week, you know, 1 week and then he goes missing. The first 5 weeks really wrapped with how he's, you know, how he's playing that. And last night you would have seen that, Roosie, that he did get up the ground and use his speed to advantage.
Leon, I'm sure you listen to Triple M Footy all weekend. Other than that, I'm not sure how many footy shows you did catch. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Craig Hutchison said something quite controversial about yourself. He said your footy team was a Ferrari, but he was unsure you were capable of driving it. Did you catch that? What is your take? I'm sure it got back to you.
It did in the end. It probably takes about 8 days to get up. But I remember I got asked about 8 days later. Look, everyone's entitled to their opinion. That's not a problem. Whether it's you guys or Hutchie, I mean, we're in a spot where we're open to public criticism. So, and that's no issue. And I'm really confident that I'm the person to drive this footy team. In terms of the Ferrari, I probably disagree. I mean, our club's made up, yes, of some high draft picks. We all know that, and how the club has sort of started up. But, you know, I look at Sam Reed, which is a great story, and Zach Williams, which is a great story. Yeah. These two rookies that have, you know, had to work their way onto an AFL list, and well, Sam Reed's a great story, who was a coach and now is back playing. So, you know, when we played Tendai Mzungu, who was a 31-year-old rookie in the first round. So we don't just look at where you've been taken in the draft. We look at players that want to compete and play defence. And we feel as though if we get that right, then it's going to hold us in good stead in most games.
Lob's the other one that got overlooked, Bakes.
I think it's all around the brand too, Swat, on Jay-Z. I mean, your brand is really strong, Leon. I just love the way you won contested ball last night against the Sydney Swans by plus 30 or something like that.
Gee.
You can run, you know, you're outside. So, yeah, there is a lot of noise and a lot of hysteria and, you know, it's not a bad car. Maybe it wasn't a Ferrari. Might have been a Porsche. But
I think Ferraris in Warrnambool growing up in these days.
But I think the way you play, mate, is terrific, and that's going to sustain, you know, some real success in the long term.
Hey, Bakes, Toby Green, where do you see him at the end of his career? Is he going to be predominantly a forward that kicks a lot of goals, or do you see him moving into the midfield at some point?
Yeah, it's a really great thing to have with Toby, that question you ask, Swatter, because he started off as a mid, as we know, in his first couple of years, and then his last probably 18 months he's created his name more as a half forward flank. And we know half forward flank can be a tough position because of, you know, it can be hot and cold, and you're relying on the midfield to give it down to you in good shape. So look, he's a little bit like Jeremy. He's just a competitive player that just hates getting beaten in one-on-ones, and his work rate's just enormous. But I was wrapped with his game last night. Obviously, he hit the scoreboard, but we put him in the midfield a little bit more than we have all year. And whenever he gets that look, he just thinks how good it is. I want to get back in the midfield. So, you know, fast forward in 10 years' time, look, I hope he continues on what he's doing. I think that you're always going to see him more centre forward because he's got that ability to find a goal and compete when he needs to.
Actually, talking about cars, Bakes, you still owe me a tank of fuel from the time of you and a friend of ours took my Celica from Melbourne, back to Warrnambool, sort of that area. Yeah, it was a Celica.
Yeah. Maroon one, Wayne, too.
It was maroon.
Yeah.
Leon, can I ask
Wayne,
you?
We could probably talk for about hours on our friend.
can I ask you, Leon, about the day you lined up on Duck? You're about 79 kilos. What did he say? Like, he's one of the great sledges of all time. So you've lined up on him at centre back. He's playing centre forward, the greatest player of all time. And he must have given you a massive sledge. Something like, what the hell? What's the coach thinking? What did he say to you?
He just looked at me and he said, please. And that was it.
And no one doubts it.
Leon, we appreciate your time. Best of luck to you and GWS in the grand, the preliminary final replay next Friday night. You're going beautifully. Thanks for your time on the Sunday, Rub.
Good on you guys. Thanks for your time.
Gather round, boys and girls. It's story time with Roozy.
This has become a very popular segment. Always makes my little man Jay-Z smile in the corner there. Now, Roozy...
I'm not sure Roozy's happy with the stinger.
You're not happy with the stinger, Roozy?
Yeah, I don't mind.
I don't mind.
I actually play it at home when I get home at night. Tell a story to Tammy before we go to bed.
She goes straight to sleep and doesn't wake up till the next day. Now, the story today, I want you to introduce it because something's been happening this week that just ticked this little story over in your mind, and it must be said you've been on the phone researching it this morning as well.
Yeah, no, look, I was interested in the PA and talking about getting their own rooms and some teams having to pay for... You know, if they want a room, normally a room with someone, and they're talking business class flights and exit rows. And it took me back, and I did have a bit of research because my memory's not great. It took me back to the lead up to round 7 in 1991. So we arrived at training, and we were going through some financial issues then, and Robert Shaw was coach. So we were told, I think on the Tuesday night, guys, we got Shorey, and he sold it really well, Shorey, to his credit. He said, look, it's got nothing to do with money, boys. But we're going to try and give you a bit of a family atmosphere, you know, so you can sleep really well when you get down to Tassie. And it's not much of a change, et cetera, et cetera. And we're all looking at each other. So we're going to billet you out. So this is 1991, round 7. And Brett Stevens, who was a good mate of mine, had lived in Tassie. As we left training, I said, Steve-o, there is no way known I'm getting billeted out. I said, so you ring one of your mates, get him to come to the airport and pick us up. And we're paying for a hotel. So Steve goes, right. So we get on the plane, we get to the airport. It's like when you're a kid, you know, and the people come with the signs and it's Mr. Baldwin and Mr. Wind. And, you know, so of course Steve-O's mate comes along and, yeah, Mr. Ruse, Mr. Stevens. Yeah, so we just duck off into the car and off we go. He drops us off at the hotel and we spend a nice evening at the hotel. And again, I did research this morning because my memory's a bit foggy, but there was one guy, and I think it was Jason Baldwin. He had the outdoor toilet. And Jimmy Wynne reminded me this morning that he was slept in an attic all night. Now, you might want to know how we actually went that particular day.
You're taking on the Hawks, the powerhouse.
So we're taking on the Hawks, 1991, round 7. It's actually a Fitzroy home game.
The boys are all well-rested. They've been billeted. They've been well-fed for their families. You know, you can't lose.
Magnificent preparation, outstanding preparation. So Steve-O and I have jumped in the car. But his mate's picked us up. He's taking us to the airport. We had a good night's sleep at the local motel. 17 goals to 3 at halftime.
Oh, halftime!
17 goals to 3. And I'll never forget
this. You went
this.
That well.
I spoke to Lynchy today and reconfirmed this. So this is how bad we were going. So we've come in the rooms at halftime. We're sitting around in Tassie. It's like a bench seat that goes around the outside of the change rooms. And Steve is quite, very fanatical, very passionate about his footy. And I think I was captain. I had my head down. We're just flat, you know. So Steve-O's gone, come on, you blokes. No bars held in the second half. And we've all looked up. We couldn't even get the sayings right. He's gone, no holds barred. We couldn't even get the saying right at halftime. We've gone out after halftime. That has obviously kick-started us because we've kicked 8 goals, but they've kicked another 19 in the second. The scores, I've looked up the scores, Duck. 36 goals, 15. Oh. 211 to 11 goals, 874. Now, this is the goal kickers. Ben Allen's kicked 7. Jarman's kicked 7, so they're two midfielders. Yeah. Kicked 14 between them. Dunstall's had a dirty day. He's finished with 6. Lynchy reminded me, and I actually with him here. Lynchy was our best player. Dunstall's kicked 6 out of 36. Hudson's kicked 5. Condon's kicked 4. Gary Ayres is playing back pocket. He's kicked 2.
How would that have washed with you, Duck?
The billeting thing. I've had a bad experience with the billets when I was a kid, but surely, how did he sell that to you blokes?
Well, he didn't sell it to me and Steve, but the other blokes were like, that sounds a great idea. Yeah.
And did your teammates find out that you actually stayed at the motel, Roozy? What did they think?
I think they twigged.
Did you Kangaroos boys used to room with others? You would have in your day, wouldn't you, Ducks?
We did. And then eventually roomed by myself. Sholey, I used to room with Sholey quite a bit. He didn't like it because he got locked out a fair bit. Can I come in yet? Nope.
Sleep in the hallway. Give him a pillow?
Because I like to watch movies.
I think you got to expand the storytelling incorporate Duck's little gems every now and again,
I like to watch movies. Sholey didn't. So they had points of difference.
Can you give him a pillow to sleep in the hallway?
That's why you should not
Can I come in yet? Nope.
Last night in the VFL, it seems unfortunately young Angus Brayshaw from Melbourne was concussed. It's not the first time it's happened. The footy manager from the Melbourne Footy Club joins us on the line to discuss that and a few other things. We appreciate him giving us some time on a Sunday morning, Josh Marnie. G'day, Josh.
G'day, Howie. Good timing, guys. Just finished boundary umpiring my son's footy and they had their first win, so all good.
Was that due to the fact you were umpiring or not?
Yeah, I boundary umpired. Just got to work my way through. A couple of good weeks of boundary umpiring. You never know what can happen after that.
Hey, mate, in all seriousness, there's some concerns. He's a very popular man, not only at your footy club, but in the footy world, Angus Brayshaw. Can you tell us what happened in the VFL last night and how he is today?
Yeah, Angus was involved in it. He kicked the ball and got hit after play, so he got a free kick for a downfield. So it was a reasonably significant hit as he went down with. We then ran through our usual concussion process, and yeah, it was a very minor concussion, is the way our doctors would describe it. But it was just enough there to say to rule him out for the second half of the game. Sorry.
So, Josh, was it more precautionary, and how's he feeling this morning?
Yeah, this morning he's only got a couple of symptoms still this morning, so he's improved since the game. But yeah, we probably want to make sure that everyone knows that it was a minor concussion. I understand that. He has got a bit of a history last year, having two concussions in quick succession. But you know, I think some of the commentary I've heard around career threatening is a bit of dramatisation of his situation right now.
So what is the level of concern with his head at the moment, Josh? I remember going back last year, he had to spend some time in a dark room after his latest hit, etc. How are you going to try and manage this, you know, from a long-term perspective?
Yeah, so last year was two incidents within a week of each other. And so certainly for those ones, when they've got two incidents that quickly together and the recovery from both of those was getting a little bit longer, you start to take a little bit longer with returning him to play. So we gave him almost a month off to get him going. He'd also had a very interrupted pre-season as well. So we really used that opportunity to get a lot of training into him. So it was a little bit around concussion management, but also to get him setting up for the rest of the year. We're treating this one as an incident that it's the first time it's happened this year. Treat it as an isolated incident, and then we'll do as we usually do with all the players. Right now, speaking to our docs this morning, they said he's progressing well, and we'd expect him to be available for this week.
So to be clear, you don't think this poses any sort of threat to his football career?
No, we don't think so. I think when you start to see an incident that doesn't look like much, and there's prolonged symptoms for a long period of time, that's when you start to look at it. But from what we're seeing at the moment, it's a reasonably significant hit. And, from as I've said already, that's probably on the minor end, and he's already showing signs of improvement. So certainly no signs of a prolonged symptoms at this stage.
Could he play next weekend, do you think, Josh? Or?
That's what we're thinking at the moment. It's just obviously early days, but from what our docs have seen already, they'd expect him to be available next weekend.
How's he going with it all, Josh?
It's a concern for Angus. He's frustrated because he wants to be playing, first of all, in the senior team, and he's been working hard in his game to get to play, and to miss the second half of last night's game is disappointing for him. And it's a concern that he continually is getting knocks to the head, and he's having some symptoms from it. So, he's a little bit thinking about it a bit at the moment, but all that we can say to Angus is keep treating it as we are. We take concussion very seriously, and if we thought it was more of an issue than it currently is, we'd certainly be looking into it.
And so that's is it affecting his confidence in any way, going, putting his head in dangerous places, winning the footy? Is it sort of impacting him on field, Josh?
No, he hasn't mentioned that at all, and from what he has been doing in the last few weeks, that even watching him, you wouldn't say that he's being hesitant at all. He's actually going in really, really well into stoppages, and you don't see anything physically by him doing that. So there's no indication watching him, and he hasn't mentioned any feelings about it at all either.
Before we let you go, mate, Jesse Hogan's obviously been in the news the past couple of weeks, had a two-match suspension for a hit against Carlton. How's he responded to that? And obviously the discussion around him being filmed with a cigarette. How's he gone on the track this week? How's his body language and intensity been on the training track?
Yeah, he's been very good. All you can do when you've been in his situation, you've got 2 weeks off, is to really train really hard, and that's what he's done. He's really looking forward to tomorrow night's game. He's very disappointed to miss the last couple of weeks, but all we can do now is train really hard and get his opportunity to play and play the best he can for the team on tomorrow night.
And Jake Melksham, the midfielder, fined for $10,000 for allowing a friend to use his betting account. Initially, he didn't provide the AFL that information. Have you been able to sort of counsel Jake around this, Josh?
Yeah, we've had some good discussions with Jake probably over the last 2 or 3 weeks when found out this information. So I had to work through that. It's been playing on his mind, and he's happy now that it's over with. He can concentrate back on playing good footy and getting back into some form.
Josh, we really appreciate you giving up some of your time on Sunday. Best of luck tomorrow night against the Tigs.
No worries, Josh. Thanks for that.
Josh Marnie from the Melbourne Football Club. Didn't seem too concerned about Angus Brayshaw. It's a concerning issue, though, Roosie, purely because we don't know much about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as I said, Jay-Z off there before, a little bit of Angus last year having so much time out was on the back of a knee injury as well. He had a limited preparation. So, you know, it was a double thing, taking the time to actually, make sure he got fit as well as clearing his head sort of thing. So, look, I think that's the big thing. I mean, there's so much... not so much misinformation, because it's the doctors that look after it, but externally, yeah, we really don't know much about concussion, and three of us played a lot, so it's certainly a relatively, I mean, it's an old injury, but it's a relatively new discussion.
Yeah, it's a new frontier.
Yeah, it is.
With so much still to learn. I think, again, we talk about maturity of certain things in our game. The game's mature because once upon a time, you got knocked out, it was a rite of passage to go back on. Mm. You had to go back on. You felt you needed to go back on because you didn't want to be seen to be weak. And you didn't want to let your teammates down. But I think through the benefit of what we're now learning from the NFL, brain injuries and the issues that are associated with that, the industry, and I think more importantly the players, understand the serious nature of concussions.
There still is a bit of an old boy mentality amongst footballers. And you see, even see Boak the other night. Now, it's not a head injury, but it's a hamstring injury. Mm. He wants to get back on. You want to get the player will always want to go back on. I heard Matty Johns speak about this in the rugby recently, because they're taking it, obviously really serious as well, sort of this concussion thing. And he said there's still that mentality in rugby, Howie, that if they don't get up and play on, that they're regarded as weak. So you got to get out of that. Players have got to get that out of their headspace. Yep. And that includes the next week. I mean, because there would be players that are categorized. Let's not talk about when the actual game itself. The doctor makes the choice then. But probably the next week, I know the doctor still has a big say, but it would fall a lot back onto the player for the following week, wouldn't it, Roosie? And that's why some people, Howie, are calling for it should be
mandatory,
an automatic week.
Well, the point you bring up there, Swatter, you say how far we've progressed, and now players that realise they don't need to go back out on the ground. I guess the great fear is that in another 15 years' time, will we look back at 2017 and say, I can't believe this guy was concussed on a Saturday and played 1 week later. I can't believe he was allowed to play
well,
2 weeks later.
I've been guilty of that, again, based on the fact that my limited understanding of concussion, a guy gets heavily hit in the head, he's clearly concussed, you sit back with no sort of, you're not privy to the conversations during the course of the week, and you go, how is that possible? But at the end of the day, we've got arguably some of the best medical people that work in elite sport across the world. So I'm going to back in their decisions to make the right calls.
And it's so hard because it's on an individual basis, because what the damage it does to one person, it doesn't do to the other.
Roosie, if you were Angus Brayshaw's dad, Mark, would you be concerned?
Well, I think as a parent, you're concerned about all injuries. There's no question.
Is this different,
that,
though?
Well, it is different, because I think with a Duck touched on a bit before, as much as we can bluff our way through, a cork thigh or a rolled ankle or whatever, you can actually have a fitness test for those sort of things, So if the doctor or the coach says, hang on, Duck's limping around like a, it looks like he's no chance to play, and Duck says, well, I want to play. The difficulty is you are relying a lot on the player to sort of say, well, I've still got a slight headache. I was reading the paper this morning and, it was a little bit blurry or something.
Couldn't
like
concentrate.
That. Yeah, so you're relying a lot on the player to give you the feedback in order to make the assessment. As much, and I agree with Swatter, the doctors are outstanding and they'll be sending you to specialists and all those sorts of things. But at the end of the day, and I think as a parent, Jay-Z, to answer your question, I suspect... that they would be asking him on a regular basis, along this week, mate, how are you feeling? And if they see anything, that's a little bit unusual, I think they'll be Angus, I don't think you should be playing this week, and having that discussion at home, because that's the discussion that the doctor can't have, because he's not seeing Angus at home. He's only seeing Angus either at his office or at the at the Melbourne Football Club.
Twilight game today. The Hawks, 0-4, take on West Coast. West Coast have had their struggles at the MCG, Duck. They lost to Richmond, I think it was, already this season. They haven't had a good record there. It's a big game for both these sides for very different reasons.
Yeah, it is. Obviously, for the Hawks to get on the board and for the Eagles to show that they can play on the MCG, it really has been a weakness of theirs. And how ironic is it against a side that has absolutely smashed them on that ground? So it'll answer two questions. It'll answer where Hawthorn really is at, and we'll find out whether West Coast are any chance, irrespective of their home and away form for the year and how many games they win. If they can't beat the Hawks on the MCG, then they can't win the grand final.
Strong words, Jay-Z. So Duck's saying if the Eagles can't win today against the Hawks, who are really battling, they can't win the grand final. Are you with that or not?
Yeah, I think the MCG does hold demons for the Eagles, and Adam Simpson has clearly recognised that.
They're probably the main reason why the demons are in their head and they come up against them today. So it's just a great opportunity to get some of that self-doubt out of their mind.
Is it a real thing, Roosie? Do you think players are a bit spooked by certain venues?
Well, I mean, you've got to respect what West Coast and Freo have to do. I mean, it is different. There's no doubt about it. You've got to get on a plane, you've got to travel 5.5 hours, and you've got to do that every second week.
But other grounds are not too bad.
No, it's not necessarily about the ground. I guess it's, yeah, and you only play there a certain amount of time. So it's not like...
It's their last time for the home and away.
Yeah, and it's their last time for the home and away season. So I think for West Coast and Freo to win grand finals, they have to be 5 to 10% better than the other teams in the competition, because what they're asked to do compared to what even the other interstate clubs are asked to do is very, very difficult. I think this is a big game. I agree with Duck. This is a big game for the West Coast Eagles. If I'm Adam Simpson, I'm winding this team up today. I'm winding them right up, and I'm saying, guys, you face it. There's some real doubt around our football team. We are playing Hawthorn. Their percentage is... I think 56% or 58%.
Yep, that's about right.
They are getting smashed, Hawthorn. So we're not talking about Hawthorn of 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We're talking about a team that's absolutely getting belted at the moment. We're talking about a venue that they struggled to win at. And we're talking about a team that people think can win a grand final. This is a massive game for the Eagles.
That's interesting, isn't it, to highlight that sort of deficiency like that? Because in the past, I get the feeling with Adam Simpson's public commentary, he sort of skirted around it. He's dismissed it. He's ignored it.
I'm not saying necessarily, because, I mean, there's always going to be hoodoos in football. There's always going to be teams. But it's not as simple as you can't win at this venue, because every team's different. I'm just more purely saying from West Coast point of view internally.
Yeah,
I'm just talking internally. If I'm Adam Simpson, I'm saying to my players, guys, we need to win this game for us, not for anyone else, for us.
How, you know what? Roosie's still got it. I can tell. Don't you reckon?
You're only allowed to ask him three times about his coaching aspirations this season.
No, okay. It was once, wasn't it?
No, three times.
Just make one observation.
Well, he's probably going to just reword it two other times.
Yeah. So you've got two up your sleeve. Do you want to use one of them now or not?
No, not yet.
Okay, Ducky. No. I opened the paper this week. I nearly cried him at Cornflakes. You know who they were criticising? Cyril Rioli.
Yeah, I know.
They're criticising Cyril.
I know.
Should they be criticising Cyril, the great one?
No, look, criticise, you know what, he's not in great form, nor are plenty of other players at the Hawks in great form. Cyril would acknowledge it, you know, he's played better, and I think he will be better.
Is he switched on, Duck? I heard you yesterday.
And by the way, that got slightly taken out of context. But, no, look, you hear things all the time, and you hear that he's... his partner, his wife, back, you know, she's back in Tiwi Islands, all that sort of stuff, and they, you know, a little bit homesick and all that. You hear things like that. Does that affect him on game day? I don't think so. I think the simple facts are they're struggling to play footy. They're not moving the ball in there as quickly as they once were. He's not getting the one-on-ones. He's not finding the space that he once was because of all of those, that chain effect that's gone right through the team. So, I'm sure we'll see. I reckon Cyril Rioli's a pretty proud footballer and been a great footballer. I reckon you might see the best of him today.
Well, I think what it does illustrate, Duck, is how difficult it is. I think I'm not sure we give enough respect to the competition as a whole. You know, to be a premiership team and a three-time premiership team, you need so much cohesion and everyone is relying on everyone else. So if you get two or three good players, it has an effect on everyone. There's no question. What the challenge for Alistair and Cyril and Bruce and Gunston and all these guys are getting, okay, they're going to have to redefine because Mitchell's not there. Lewis is not there. That's just the reality of and some of their older players are getting older, but they're still in the primes of their career. So Cyril Rioli, Gunston, Bruce, guys like that, you know, and along with obviously Alistair helping them, that's what the coach is there to do. They have to redefine now without those other players and take this team forward.
Cyril Schwatter. They're on the back of Cyril.
I find it amusing that you actually have to stand up to make your point as a rabid Hawthorn supporter.
Cyril. That's the only time
you've stood up.
It's about Cyril. I can't believe they're coming for him. It's just not on, Jay-Z. Some things you just don't do, Roosie.
The Sunday Rubs.
Oh, back to school.
Back to school quiz.
All right, it's time for the back-to-school quiz. Roosie has one win. Schwatter has two wins.
That is.
The very temperamental Duck has one win. And the cleverest man, apparently, in the box that claims to be the number one journalist in the country, Jay-Z, yet to score.
I've never claimed that, Howie, and it's strange that people do.
Have you been disappointed with your performance?
Your performances so far are nearly as bad as your shorts you're sporting today, but well, let's get this quiz underway.
I've been gypped twice,
I've
Howie.
I wear those shorts.
Oh, yeah, but, mate, if you're going to have them rolling that high, the legs need to be cleaned up a bit because
if
the forest on them.
You've got it, flaunt it.
Yeah.
Well done, Jay.
Correct. If you've got it, flaunt it, so you should be wearing the long strides. But anyway, maths, how many goals did Tom Boyd kick in last year's grand final?
Schwatter.
That was Schwatter.
Four.
Incorrect.
Three.
JJ.
Duck.
Two.
Roosie is correct. They've never used his buzzer, so we'll give
him the
right.
I did use my buzzer.
Okay.
He did. Yeah.
Well done, Roosie.
Jeez, I tell you, you get his use checked, how are you?
Duck put his hand up like he was in the classroom, forgot his buzzer.
No, I thought I was going to be the ruckman.
History. Which two teams played in the 1999 AFL Grand Final?
Broncos.
That was Duck.
Yes, well, that's obvious. Kangaroos and Carlton.
Who was the pre-game entertainment? There's human nature, but that's not a question in the quiz. Geography. So Rouge one, Duck one. I like where we're going. Name the street that borders the Gabba. That is also the name of a Powderfinger album. I like this. Ooh. At one end is the Stanley Street end. At the other...
Swatter. Vulture Street.
Yes, Swatter gets on the board. Very nicely done. Duck one, Swatter one, Rouge
we
one.
We just check Jay-Z's buzzer, please.
Is it working?
Vulture Street.
Is your buzzer... Yes, definitely
Swatter's,
working.
Swatter's related to John Stevens, so any music questions, he's probably going to get them.
He's got nothing to do with Powderfinger.
No, I know, but he's still...
What's your relation
he's
to...
Still a muso.
He's my wife's uncle.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we go back to the 2012 AFL Grand Final between Sydney and Hawthorn. Name the player.
Picked up by Hanbury.
Duck.
Snap.
Duck.
And
duck.
Ruffle.
Incorrect.
Ruse.
Malcheski.
Ruse. He's doing his own work now, Ruse. A little bit of a fish puff from our man.
I actually gave that same answer about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah.
So but this was the appropriate one.
But
now.
I got it wrong the other week, though.
Ruse 2, Schwatter 1, Duck 1, Jay-Z yet to trouble the scorers. English. How many vowels are there in Collegiagne?
Duck.
Please.
How long's he got? Right, put him on the timer, Jace.
Three.
Incorrect. Jay-Z's writing it down.
JJ.
Yep.
Four.
Yes, correct.
Yep.
O, A, and I. So Jay-Z's on the board. It's close. Jay-Z one, Duck one, Schwatter one, Roosie two with two questions to go. Who said this?
A leadership position should normally be occupied
between... It is. Jay-Z moves into two alongside Roosie at two.
He might have been in the press conference. That's
he
unfair.
He might have been. So this could be the deciding question, the history bonus round. Schwatter one, Duck one, Roos two, Jay-Z two. Jay-Z yet to win in season 2017. How many Coleman medals did Brendan Favola win?
Schwatter. One.
Incorrect.
JJ.
Two. Hang on, I was
two.
Right behind him, so I should have been in place.
No,
he
that's
did that
right.
Before, too.
No.
There's a setup here.
It was nearly a draw, so I should have been the next person to answer.
Yep. Yeah, tape, please.
The winner of today's quiz with three is Jay-Z. He's on the board.
Ridiculous.
I agree.
Sit down.
He's got the
sit
hands
down.
In
like
the air.
Who's in charge of this show?
We all had a chat on the way in today. Give you that one anyway, Jay.
Well done, Jay-Z.
Well done.
Thank you.
The competitiveness of this group never ceases to astound me. We brought this idea up in a February meeting. Everyone's like, oh, I'm not sure we're that keen. Now Roosie's doing fist pumps. Duck is jumping over the top of Schwatter. And Jay-Z, look at him, proud as punch in the quarter. Yep. You were gone at 0-2.
Yep. Come from the back.
Hey,
I'm off the mark.
Let's move on to Anzac Day. Essendon take on Collingwood. It's a wonderful day, but it's a big game, probably more so for the Collingwood Footy Club, I would have thought, Jay-Z.
Huge game. And Michael Malthouse, former Collingwood Premiership coach, Howie, has highlighted this in his Sunday Herald Sun column today. Now, you have to go through about three quarters of the way through the column. I mean, he does talk about very important Anzac Day themes. I don't want to trivialise that. But three quarters of the way through his column, he says this, and my antenna raised up, Mark. He says, the Magpies have a full book of players, but still have looked unsettled in their three losses. Consistency is key. Defeat on Tuesday is curtains for the Magpies. Now, that is, to me, a former coach throwing his current coach under the bus a little bit, saying if they don't beat Essendon, the big Anzac Day game on Tuesday, they can't make finals, and therefore we know the background and what Nathan Buckley said, therefore he is gone. So it was just a pretty thinly veiled comment, and I don't know whether you boys agree. Is it that black and white for Nathan Buckley on Tuesday? Does the whole year depend on beating Essendon, Wayne?
I think it's, well, I don't think they'll play finals footy, whether they beat Essendon or not.
Cards are marked.
I've tipped Essendon to win. Look, I've said...
Have you really tipped Essendon?
Yeah, I've said that I think that... look, at the end of the day, I don't like to see any coach, be sacked. But Bucks has said himself, if they don't play finals footy, then he realises it's curtains. And I honestly believe it'll be a miracle if they play finals. So, you know, you work it out.
Is it harsh for Mick to say it like that, Paul? You know, lose on Tuesday and it's all over?
I mean, look, there's been an uneasy relationship between Mick and Nathan for a number of years. So
he's still dirty, isn't he?
Well, look, I mean, his job is, Mick's job now is to be in the media, and when you're in the media, you've got to write things that, you know, are topical. And clearly, you know, I think what Duck said about Nathan is, look, most people probably would have known going into the season that, you know, Collingwood didn't make the finals. But when your coach puts that on the agenda, you know, it becomes even stronger, because what tends to happen then is... It's the media then asking a question in relation to something that's already been said. So when you're now speaking to Gary Pert, come round 11, depending on what their record is.
It's a reference point.
Nathan said this. So that's an uncomfortable situation and an unnecessary situation. And look, I applaud Bucks. I worked with him for a couple of years, and he's really honest. Sometimes you can be too honest. Because, as I said, I think everyone thinks that that's the case. But the reality is, if they have a number of really bad injuries, lose some close games, you know, I think you can still hang on to your job, depending. I guess my thing is more around, and I call it the brand. They need to establish a brand of football, regardless of the results. So when I look at probably Sydney up until last night, I thought they were disappointed, but last night, Sydney have a brand. Even though they're 0-4, they have a brand that you know to go to. That is what I'm more concerned about.
You don't see that in Collingwood.
I don't see that at Collingwood. One week they have 115 tackles, the next week they had 56. I mean, that's not a brand. Everyone talks about their lack of scoring. But for me, if you're a fan, scoring is a result of other things that you do around the ball, Doug.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. You watch them and you don't know exactly what they're trying to do, and it changes from week to week.
How can that be, Doug, after having the coach there for 5 years?
And therefore, well, I don't know. And there's only one person that can honestly... a few people within the four walls of Collingwood that can honestly answer that. I'm sure they're trying to play a particular brand. It's just not obvious to us sitting up here watching it. And it's for those reasons and their lack of firepower, and I know you mentioned scoring, but it's because of that brand that they play, the forward, if you're playing in the forward line, Rusey, a bit like watching Carlton on Friday night, you know, the way they move the ball, and then, you know, I saw Wiedering lead about 15 times. Collingwood's no different. You watch the players, they don't know where the ball's going to go. There's no system moving the ball inside their forward 50. So that, for me, the reason why I've tipped Essendon on Tuesday and why they can't play finals footy is because of the brand and the fact, because of that brand, they can't score.
And I think, Howie, to be fair, you know, if you put your other hat on, I think you can look at some reasons with injuries, with new personnel. So it's not quite as simple as, you know, having one pre-season, this is what you want to do. So they've had significant reasons why perhaps they can't establish it consistently. But I guess what I'm saying, there is a point where, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's Collingwood, it doesn't matter whether, you know, if you look at Brisbane and Carlton. Yeah, they're in a phase where they're probably going to be towards the bottom of the ladder. But what you would like to see as a Brisbane supporter, as a Carlton supporter, is, yeah, probably at the moment about half of game of footy where they're establishing their brand. It's going to creep up to three quarters next year, a quarter the year after. Collingwood's not in that position. Collingwood's in that sort of 7 to 10 bracket.
Contender. Yeah.
Where they, that brand needed to be established. And they, in order to do that, you have to do it for four quarters. I mean, the thing that again, I'm most critical of is how you can go for 116 tackles 1 week, because that's an effort-based thing. Sometimes scoring can be, yeah, you shank one off Darcy Moore drops a mark or whatever. I call them skill-based things. Mm-hmm. So you can't, they're not as controllable as effort-based areas. If your effort-based area 1 week is Adam Treloar getting 15 tackles and the next week 5 tackles, still side bottom, 10 tackles 1 week, I think two tackles. That's purely, and what I agree with Duck as well, we don't actually know what they value internally. What's the vision that they show on a Monday? So I'm sure they're trying to establish a brand. Yeah. There's no question about that.
It's just not obvious to us.
It's just not obvious at this stage to the people watching.
Just quick thought on this, because Sammy Menengola's wandered in the box. He is going to join us next. A man with a very interesting story to tell. Mason Cox comes back into that Collingwood squad. I reckon he debuted on Anzac Day previously. Jay-Z, is he the answer in the rucking up forward for Collingwood, Duck?
Nope.
That's all you got for me? Nope. Yep. Why is that? Why not?
I just don't think he is. And if the weather is meant
it's
to
be wet.
Meant to be rain on Tuesday. What I do think that he gives them, he's such a big guy. He certainly gives them a target. He's not going to be outmarked. He'll bring the ball to the ground. So that'll be predictable to everyone else. So the one thing you're not going to get against Mason Cox is intercept marks if he's in the area. He does compete well, and he most certainly bring it to where he wants to bring it to, just purely off the back of his height. Now, that's an advantage. Now, whether they want to go with that in the wet is another story.
That's a bit more expansive than nope.
Into the path of Menengola. Got out of the way, Hawkins. Menengola went back, got it, and kicked their third.
Menengola from 50. Sam Menengola, bang! Have some of that.
McDonald's new family McValue box has the choice of 4 burgers, 4 small soft drinks and family size fries. As you just heard from the commentary, Sammy Menengola from the Geelong Footy Club joins us in the box today. Not playing, we don't need to go over that. How are you, Sammy?
Good, thanks.
Hey,
thanks,
great to see you. I love a story of determination and not giving up, and you've got one in AFL. For those that aren't aware, mate, just tell us a little bit about your footy journey and how you've ended up at Geelong, because you certainly didn't start there, mate.
I guess the short version is started at Hawthorn and really enjoyed my time there, but obviously got injured at the first half, and then had a bit of a decision to make whether I wanted to stay in Victoria or obviously the option to go home was pretty strong, and there was another Victorian club that was an option, so it's a hard decision to make when you're 19, but decided to try and come home and got to Freo for a few years, which didn't quite work out. Had a lot of injuries and at times just didn't play great footy, and I think probably at least half my time there I was in rehab, and then obviously at the end of the 3 years there my time was up, and went to Subiaco in the Waffle, which was really good. Started to probably love footy again, and then from the back of that was lucky enough to end up at Geelong, which I say lucky enough because I could have ended up at a lot of different clubs, but to end up at Geelong was pretty special.
So, mate, you didn't play a game for Hawthorn or Freo.
No.
So, at that stage, you were four or five years into your AFL journey?
Yeah, four, and then it still felt like I was in the AFL system playing at Subi because I was trying to replicate the system.
Did you think it was getting away from you or not?
It's an interesting one. Like, I never thought, I always thought I was good enough to play AFL footy. It was just that you sort of start to think after that period of time that a lot is going to have to go right for you to end up back in the system. It's sort of like, will anyone give me the opportunity? But still always thought I was good enough.
It is a good story because you have shortened a little bit here, and I'm reading your bio that our good man behind me gives us. And when you went to Subi, you missed 10 weeks. You missed the first 10 weeks with a serious ankle injury. Yep. So your body's let you down again. You eventually play in a premiership. So it really is a good story of persistence and perseverance knows no failure, Vruzzi.
I think it's fantastic. And, Sammy, well done, because I think there's a real generation of players. And I guess in one sense you're fortunate to get drafted, but there is a generation of players that just miss out. And I was talking to Johnny Blake. I stayed with him for a couple of nights. There's not a lot of difference between the last 20 players that are picked and the 20 players that miss out. But those 20 players can get lost to the system. What would your advice to those guys be in terms of what you've been able to do? Because I'm a little bit critical of the system they come from, and I think we are losing generations of footballers. And you look at a Dane Rampey, who's an All-Australian player. Mick Barlow as well, who I think you would have played with at Freo. Yep. So what would your advice be to those young guys, either coming to a draft, may miss out, or maybe 2 or 3 years out of the draft and still playing VFL, Waffle, Sandful?
Well, I think if you look at any of those guys, like if you look at Dane Rampey, Mick Barlow, to a lesser extent myself, none of us are perfect players. Like none of us are... you know, the complete package like a Joel Selwood. But we all, I think, the common theme is that we all just worked out what we were good at and really capitalised on it. I think because AFL systems, the resources there are unbelievable. Like the assistant coaches and the knowledge and the feedback you can pick up is amazing, but it you can get lost in it. And that certainly happened to me at times in my career. So I think the trick is sort of taking what you need and adding to what you're really good at, but not losing that, because it is easy to sort of try and be everything to everyone, and then you sort of end up being nothing to no one to a degree.
Yeah, I reckon that's a fantastic piece of advice. If I look at someone like a Brett Kirk, he played to his strengths, and I think there's too much, you know, I can't kick on the left, or he can't do this, or he can't do that, because you're only going to improve that a minimal amount, even if you practice forever. But what you can even improve on is your strengths, and your strengths. I mean, there's very few blokes like Duck that didn't have any weaknesses. But your strengths are going to make you what is a good player. The other question, just following from that, you've been at three really good clubs. I mean, Hawthorn, Geelong and Freo. Was there a dramatic difference you've found in the three clubs?
Yeah, they're all different. I mean, clubs are sort of like people. They've all got their own personalities. I think we sort of all know that. But Freo is obviously, like, they're a pretty demanding sort of culture, and they were sort of... because they were establishing that real strong culture, everything was really, really strict. And I feel like at Hawthorn and Geelong, it is nice in that it's sort of like, because they've been there and had some success, they sort of know what needs to get done and what doesn't need to be so, I guess, policed at times. So, yeah, I mean, they're definitely all different. I mean, as I said, they've all sort of got their own personality. And I think clearly Geelong's the one that's probably clicked best for me. But that's not to say it's better or worse than any others.
Who's the easiest coach to mimic? Ross, Scotty or Clarko? Who's your best impersonation?
Well, Scotty uses too many words that we don't understand, so that sort of takes him out. Clarko, you just got to do a lot of screaming. And but Ross has got some good sort of one-liners that tend to stick with you.
We're speaking to Sammy Meningola on the Sunday Rub, Jay-Z.
Any favourite lines stick out in your mind? Anything typically... particularly humorous that you remember from Rossi Lyon, Sam?
He used to love telling us that he's not selling us a pup. You know, he'd be trying to sell defence to us, for example, and, you know, I'm not selling you a pup. So, yeah, he's got those little one-liners that he just trots out without thinking, I think.
Hey, there was a story in the Herald Sun this week about Patrick Dangerfield and how he's changed his game a fair bit this year, and that was in response to the finals exit sort of last year. More contested possession, more handballing, less kicking, and probably less long kicking and dumping into the forward line. Can you talk about that dynamic and what you've seen the change in Patrick Dangerfield is?
Well, I mean, he's probably just that's probably a symptom of the way that we've tried to change our movement around the ball. So
what's that?
I think if you look at the Western Bulldogs, it's, you know, the trend in AFL is obviously someone wins a flag doing something different, and a lot of people try and mimic that or at least take a portion of that into their own game, and we've probably been like that this year. We've just tried to...
more hands?
Use more handball around the ball and I guess have better entries. I mean, we've spoken about the prelim final. We got a lot of entries, but if you looked at the quality of them, they weren't quite there. So just trying to generate better returns from our entries. And
you feel like that's working for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was saying before that, you know, this feels like this season that most teams have had patches where they've played really good footy and then patches where they haven't played as good a footy. And it's the ladder's almost worked out based on who's capitalised on when they've played good footy and who's sort of maybe coughed up too much when they haven't. So we're probably in that boat, but I feel like our good footy is really good, and now we've just got to try and get it for four quarters.
Oh, just hang on, Duck. I think we just need to lighten it up a touch. I've heard you learned a gentleman asking all these real serious footy questions. Just relax a bit, Sammy. Is it true?
It's gold.
I know. Is it true? Just let me know the answer to these questions. Is it true you're obsessed with cycling?
That is true, yep.
You're a Lycra type wearer?
Yeah, I was out this morning.
Really? Coffee? Yep. You love your coffee?
Yeah, well, you can't ride and not.
What do you order?
Coffee. Depends. Depends how many I've had. If I've had too many, I'll just stick with the espressos. But
okay.
Yeah, a little long Mac or something like
that. Oh, long
Mac. Yeah, whatever's going.
I hope you ride in the bike lane and get off the bloody road.
Now, Duck, don't. Now, your old man, he's very senior at Channel 9 in Perth, is he?
Yeah, he is, yep.
We got some issues at Channel 10 financially. Can I send my resume through that way? Will that work out for
us? Yeah,
I'll
flick his email to you if you want.
Did you own a T-shirt company at one stage?
Yeah, I did for a while. That was a little bit of an experiment that me and Fifey
As in that Fife?
Yep.
What type of T-shirts did you knock out?
Just some streetwear sort of stuff, just basic T-shirts, a few prints, but... Yeah, it was good. We learnt a fair bit about business in that time, but obviously I think the second year of that T-shirt business was my first year out of the system. So when you step out of the AFL bubble and you actually have to get a real job, T-shirt business on the side, it's pretty hard to manage, so that one fell away.
Now, Duck, I was heading down for a surf on some stage this week, and there I see Cam Guthrie getting his wetsuit on, and Jackson Thurlow. Mitchie Duncan was going for a swim, so I thought I'll go for a surf with the Geelong boys, Sammy. And then big Marky Blitzarfs gets out, and I think this is a man that, you know, from what we're told, he should have been an Olympic athlete. He's a superstar out here on the field. He wanders down the beach, all 6'8" of him, with a freaking boogie board. A boogie board, of all things.
The esky lid.
Now, does this surprise you, Sammy? Because it disappointed me no end.
Well, it didn't surprise me because he's been talking flat out about it for the last 2 weeks about how good he's been going. Oh.
Did he have his flippers on?
He had his flippers and these things on his hands. Did you see me? I got barreled. Mate, you weren't standing up, Duck. I had to let him know.
I think he was contemplating going down to Bell's for a while, and Guth talked him out of that for fear of the ridicule.
Hey, Sammy, we just saw something interesting out on the ground, and we know Chris Scott does this a bit, but just 10 minutes ago, the coach had all the players together, probably for about 10 minutes, I reckon, in the middle of the ground. Bit of hand gesturing, point that way, point that way. What does Scotty actually say, you know, an hour before a game out there to you guys?
It's more to do with the specifics of the day, what we've spoken about during the week, and what we have to get done, obviously, to get the win today. So, in essence, it's sort of like our first team meeting. We just do it out on the ground, and then you can go out and have a kick and those sort of things.
Hey, Sammy, we really appreciate your time. We look forward to seeing you up. You're only out for 1 week, aren't you?
1 week,
so
yep.
You take on Collingwood, which is our game, I reckon, next Sunday, Duck. So we'll see you back out there. Sammy, thanks for coming in.
Sounds good.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
You love your sting, don't you? Look at you giggling away in the corner there.
Look at his chest puff out like a peacock.
What have you got for us, Big Daddy?
Hey, potential major fixture reform is on the AFL agenda for next season. So at the moment, what the AFL is trying to do is look at a way to try and eliminate the late season games that turn into real snooze fests. And they're that's often between the lower placed clubs. So for next year, and this is an absolute live possibility, boys, the AFL 18 teams could be split into three conferences, top six, middle six, bottom six. The top six vie for final starting positions. The middle six then battle for seventh and eighth, and maybe ninth and tenth. There's a wild card weekend. But the real headache comes in the bottom six, Howie. And that's where the league is trying to find a way to incentivize these bottom six clubs to win games of footy late in the season. Now, last year, for example, five of the bottom six games only won one game out of their last five, and Essendon won two. They go into develop mode. They go to sleep, clearly. I mean, they're looking for as high a draft pick as they can. Star players go and get early season surgeries. Now, I spoke to the broadcast and fixture boss, Travis Old, last week, and he said that there is a possibility they could give the best bottom six team. So over the last five rounds of the season, the best bottom six team could have a passage through to the finals. Now, my Twitter feedback blew up basically the weekend at this suggestion. The other one is extra draft points or a higher draft pick. But then you've got a team finishing, say, 13th, getting the number one pick or a better pick than the team that finished last. And I don't think we want that. So, Ruzi, I see you shaking your head. What would you think if the 13th team got the chance to go into a wild card weekend where they take on, say, 9th or 10th, for a position in the top eight?
One of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. And I'm 53 years of age.
Why is that?
Well, it's just...
You're not on your own in that view, by the way.
Well, why play the season then? Why don't we just go the last 6 weeks and we'll split up the teams from the ladder before and then we'll say... It's just... I mean, the season is a war of attrition. The season is the best eight teams at the end of the season playing in finals. I'm not sure why we have to worry about the bottom six teams. There's a thing called the lottery in the NBA, which people have been talking about for the best part of...
Are you a fan of that instead?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Bring in a lottery.
Bring in a lottery. Then... I mean, in the same breath, I think in the article I read, Jay-Z, that they think tanking doesn't exist anymore.
Does it?
Well, if it doesn't exist, why are you bringing in these new rules? Mm. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. It either does exist or it doesn't exist. So I just think it's ridiculous. Look, obviously with 18 teams, Duck, it's hard to have a fair, you know. Well, but the reality is that's what it is, and I don't see any point in changing it.
Well, the only fair. I agree with you, Ruzy. I'm not a fan of it. And the only real way to make it an even draw is to play each other once or twice.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yep. Jay-Z, I read the article with interest. I must admit, though, it took me a long time to find the article. She was about 4 or 5 pages back. I thought it was your back page material, Swatter. I thought it was the lead in the sport. Would it be fair to say you were disappointed, Jay-Z, that you weren't on the back page?
We've had some robust conversations about that topic. Fair to say, Howie. I thought it was an interesting yarn, considering, as Ruzy just highlighted, it's such a left field option.
So what was the feedback in relation?
95% negative, Ruzy. Yeah, yeah. But the AFL, it's one of the big headaches for the AFL, is trying to wipe out these ugly games
You can't have a perfect season.
No, exactly.
It's never going to happen. It's an aspirational goal that's unrealistic.
But they get so boring, these late season games, Schwatter.
But 10,000 people that's the nature of sport, though. You have teams that are flying, and unfortunately there are teams towards the tail end of the season that are really struggling, and those games do become quite painful.
I actually disagree. I reckon, and Ruzy's brought this up, and I've really listened to him a number of times. I don't reckon it's where you're at. It's your brand and the brand of footy you're playing. If you're losing and you're playing a good brand of footy, I reckon your fans do turn up. I reckon it's a complete opposite of that. If you're playing, if you're not scoring and you're playing, you know, I guess footy that people don't like to watch, then you're probably right. But it's all about the brand.
I'll tell you what I would do. Mm-hmm. Let's say I would, the last 6 weeks or however many weeks, play your VFL team before your senior team. So then your fans get a look at the future. And that's the big thing I think is missing in footy now. Because if you go to when we first started...
You can't say that anymore.
You go when we first started, under 19 seconds. How many people went to the football, particularly the bottom teams, to go, okay, well, I'm not just going to watch my senior team. I'm actually going to watch the kids play today. Mm. So all of a sudden you come and watch... Yeah, you know, and 3 years ago, if they had to come and watch Casey play and then Melbourne... Melbourne might have got beaten by 10 goals, but they go away thinking, gee, I just saw young Christian Salem play and Christian Petracca play and Angus Brayshaw play. It's the same for Melbourne. It'd be the same because I know often the Sydney teams play before the Swans.
Yep.
The Brisbane teams play. I think it's something that's hugely missing from the Victorian-based competitions.
Curators get a bit funny about the surface in August before finals.
Just before we move off this one, so how much pride's at stake in the old Herald Sun back page? What does Robbo sit around and say, well, I've got 7 back pages. Then Ralphie says, well, I've got 6. And then your Mickey Warner comes, I've got 4. And then Jay-Z's flat because he's only got 2. Is that how it works?
I think it's widely documented that we are a competitive bunch within the media. And, we try and get the best stories every
day. But you don't go in there on a Monday morning. Sometimes there are some robust conversations. You don't go in there with a Monday morning and you don't put the A-grade Jay-Z story on the table. You hold that one back and throw a little furphy at, don't you? It's brinkmanship in there on a Monday, isn't it?
And sometimes you keep stuff a little quiet.
You consider yourself better than those other blokes, Jay-Z, as 100%. Far as journalists go?
No, I'm a battler. I'm a foot soldier.
So you're happy to say that Johnny Ralph's a better journalist than you are, are you?
Look, well, Robbo's the chief football writer.
So Robbo's a better journalist than you, is he?
Swatter
brings up a good point. Clearly, having, you know, the fact that I write at The Age, different paper, but you do have to sit around and have a discussion at the start of the week with the other journos, because if your idea, Howie, on a Friday... And if Rowan say writing something similar on a Wednesday, then you obviously can't write that. So you sort of do have to be across what one another is talking about. Is it the same at the son, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to work out ideas on Monday, what's going to hold for the weekend. And sometimes when your idea gets knocked off on a Thursday or Friday, there are some curse words.
You've never seen a man walk around like Duck, say, oh, I just see my article back page this week. Just absolutely gets a kick out of it.
You do know when they like it, because they do. They put it on the back page.
But what about, do you know if you've written it, you've hit a home run? So you've gone, this is a back page article.
You'd know, yeah. I think you know straight away.
And then when you get buried,
You're not always happy with that.
topic two, Jason.
If you're any further back than the second back page, you know that you pretty much didn't like it.
They didn't write it. Yeah. Certainly, there's usually.
Might as well have gone in the bin.
Yeah. You got a couple more for us, Clarkey?
Yeah, hey, the deliberate out of bounds issue is certainly heating up. There were two last night in the Fremantle North Melbourne game in the third quarter. It was Ibbotson, you know, that quick snap out of congestion, 40 metres, bounces out of bounds, and then wasn't pinged. And then the next one, I think it was Ben Cunnington, very similar, was pinged. And Brad Scott said this in the press conference to highlight this inconsistency we are seeing in this rule at the moment.
The umpires just, you know, flipped the coin. It's not a consistent rule. It's hard to adjudicate. You know, they're not, it's not black and white, so we'd all be inconsistent if we were asked to adjudicate that rule. Well, I think the Sandfall are trialling a last kick or handball out of bounds, which simplifies it. But I don't know, I think stoppages are an important part of our game. You know, you've got, you know, a champion ruckman in Aaron Sanderland's playing and an All-Australian ruckman in Todd Goldstein, and if you start paying a lot of free kicks around the ball and you start paying deliberate out of bounds or last touch out of bounds, what do you need a ruckman for? We don't want to breed ruckman out of the game.
I think the last touch rule would be a bit excessive for mine. Do we agree on that? Does anyone want a last touch rule?
No.
And I sort of disagree a little bit with Brad there. I actually think that they've got it right most times. Whoa. I really do. I know there's some tough ones.
Like the Kate Simpson one.
Yeah, listen, I know there are some tough ones, but generally, in a game where they pay those tough ones, they pay them all day. And that's you just want the consistency on that. You don't care. If it's going to be really tough adjudicated, then as long as it's really tough all day.
The issues aren't with the umpires. Yeah. The umpires are the ones that have to execute the decision-making process. It's the rules of the game committee that are making it harder for the umpires to play the game.
I've loved the rules.
I think it's good that it tries to keep the ball in play, but sometimes you just think the player needs to have some leeway when they're literally kicking it 40 metres downfield and it didn't quite come off their boot right. That's the one which I think sits uncomfortably.
If it's a skill error, it shouldn't be played. If it's an absolute skill error, but what you've got to remember is players, well, they're highly skilled players. Now, they want you to do everything you can. So even if you're under pressure in the back, a little bit of pressure in the back pocket, and you're kicking the ball around your body, Roosie, if there were goals back in the middle of the ground, I guarantee you they'd get very close to those goals. Yeah. But they kick it towards the boundary because that's where they want it to go. And that gets paid deliberate out of bounds, and I think it's fair enough.
The problem that I have with a couple of them is the ones where you're actually kicking on an angle, because if you don't, you're going to get smothered. They're the ones that I've had a problem with. Because it's unrealistic to think a player's going to kick it straight into someone's belly. Yeah,
and that was Ibbotson last night.
Just to try and actually keep the ball in. I mean, I don't know, and I spoke to someone about this, and they said, oh, well, what you need to do is not kick it as hard. I mean, it's just very difficult for a player to be able to do that. Thinking about... Yeah, I agree with the goal concept, but if you're actually just trying to avoid your ball getting smothered, it's then hard to say, oh, well, I'm going to kick it 25 metres instead of 35 metres. That's not just going through your mind at that stage.
Spot on. The third topic is Duck. Now, let's be honest. He comes in here with a tightish purple shirt. I think three of his four buttons are
made. So he's halfway there to having it in mint condition.
Well, I can see basically all of Duck's chest at the moment. I just wonder, Duck, whether there's a bit more strut today. There's a big story in the Herald Sun today, a Robbo column, about you being the next Hall of Fame legend. Now, there's Gary Ablett Sr., there's Malcolm Blight, there's your good self.
Chief.
The Chief as well, Jason Dunstall. Now, we all agree these are absolute superstars of the game. But, Duck, have you sort of been told or any sort of maybe do you think you could be the next sort of superstar?
I've always liked Robbo's articles. I reckon he's a pretty good judge. So
he might have nailed it on this occasion.
He might have got this one. No, you know what? You don't even think about it, do you, Roosie? It's not even I actually think that this man here should be getting a phone call. He should be in actually the Hall of Fame. And just to be in the Hall of Fame is a huge honour. And I guess if it was ever to be, I guess probably the highest accolade you can get in footy would to be inducted as a legend. So if it was ever to happen, it would be a huge thrill.
Is there criteria around it? Because I'm unsure. I had this discussion with Mike Sheen a couple of years ago when, can't remember who didn't get in, but I remember I said, how does he not get in? Yeah, is there actual criteria?
It's heavily restricted in how many legends are allowed to be promoted. So it's only 10% of the whole...
You're talking about Hall of Fame.
No, no, I'm talking about the legends. Legend.
No, I think it's just the discretion. It's the greatest players, really, that they
Because like you said, I mean, if you put a list down, I mean, it's very hard to determine between player A, player B. I mean, did you say Malcolm Blight? Malcolm Blight's not a legend, is he?
No.
No.
Now, he's kicked 100 goals. Is that correct? Yep. Won a Brownlow medal. Won a Sandover medal.
No, McGarry.
McGarry medal. Yep. Premiership coach. I suppose that's my point. It's like he's done everything in football, and I'm not really clear why he wouldn't be. And this is all due respect to Duck or Jace or whoever it might be. But there's not a lot more you can do in football, correct me if I'm wrong, than what Malcolm Blight's done. Yet he's not in. But yeah. I'm not familiar with there. Is there a criteria?
No, it's just it's a discretionary thing on the committee, really. But when you're coming down to Gary Ablett Sr. versus Wayne Carey, one of the greatest players to ever play, like, it is splitting hairs.
No,
it is a very difficult sort of a decision. But I just wonder whether our man Howie, when you're introducing him later in the season, where he's going to be an AFL legend.
Nothing would make me happier.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks footy.